Welcome back to Restless. Have you seen that rain outside right now?
It's not raining right now.
It is.
No.
It was raining on the way over here.
Yeah, it poured on me when I went for a run.
Yeah.
But what time was that?
Six.
An hour ago.
Oh, and I walked here. It was fine. It was at 20 of 7.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
This is very helpful for people listening at noon or any other time on some random day.
We recorded this a little bit before. Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. This is not live.
You can figure out who's on this episode. I don't even need to say the names anymore. That's Paul.
Yeah, I'm Paul.
That's Diane. Mm-hmm. So anyway, welcome back to Restless. And one of the topics in everyday conversation, and particularly in the news a lot, has been climate change. And none of us, except for Paul, is an expert.
I know something.
Yeah, he knows. You probably know more than us. Mm-hmm. So
I may.
So, you know, we just want to talk about that because it is so prevalent and there's so many different, very politicized, very divisive stances on this. Climate change is a hoax. Climate change is real. We need to stop having babies. You know, don't ever burn another fossil fuel in the rest of your life. You know, there's just a lot of different things that are thrown at us. But what's a Catholic response to this issue of climate change? First of all, I mean, in your opinion, your totally unprofessional, like layperson opinion, is climate change real?
Well, it's interesting. So I remember being in fourth grade, which would have been 2000, I think, or thereabouts. And I remember having to write a paragraph in science class, I think, or something, about global warming. And that was the first I had ever heard of it.
Huh.
And I believe it was probably one of the first times my parents had ever heard of it.
Because I had heard of it back in the 90s.
Well, I'm younger than you.
I know, but yeah, I still can't believe you were in fourth grade in 2000. But
something like that, yeah.
Not that much older than you. Anyway.
I guess maybe it was 99.
So you heard it back then.
So that was it. But it was interesting. So my point is that I was in fourth grade in the late 90s, and I knew about global warming, which tells you something about that it's been in vogue for 30 years.
It has, but the name has changed, right?
It was global warming.
It was global cooling before that in the 70s. That was a big
very
concern.
Very much so, yeah. Yeah, it was global cooling and then global warming. So now we call it climate change,
right,
which is all encompassing.
We can't decide if it's warming.
Because the current science, so to speak, is that it's, you know, the global warming will, some places may get colder and some places will get drier and some places will get wetter. And
so really it's just get more extreme.
Yeah. Now my goal is, and I think people who have listened to this podcast for 3 years have understood that I'm in a particular political persuasion. And so to irritate people that are opposite of my political persuasion, I will say that I'm pro-global warming, which is great because they cannot argue with me that I don't think it's happening or that I think about it as human-related or not human-related. It doesn't matter because I'm for it. And that's very irritating because you can't really argue with that other than calling me an idiot.
Do you just want like Miami to go underwater? Is that the issue? Or
no, like, I don't want Miami to go. I like Miami. I actually quite enjoy Miami. I'm going in a couple weeks. But
so why would you be pro-global warming?
I'm not. It's just a... It's
just being contrarian.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's fair.
Well, I would say, so my big thing about global warming is that first of all, the audacity to think that we could change the course of weather in a short amount of time is still difficult for me to wrap my head around.
Mm.
And maybe there is some effects. And it's like, fine, even if I give you that there are effects of global warming that have taken and we have caused it as humans, I'll give you all of that. The fact that we think that we can reverse it or halt it in some way that's meaningful is absurd. It's extremely complex. We think about everything. I think one of my big issues with the global warming debate is we boiled everything down to carbon emissions. Everything is carbon emissions, and that's a univariable analysis. And with univariable analysis, you're bound to be wrong.
Mm.
And so we've only looking at one variable, and everything in the world, I know this, I'm in the investment industry, and I look at this stuff all day, and everything revolves around carbon emissions in particular. And it's like, well, it's way more complicated than that.
Well,
the largest prevalent, first one last thing. So a greenhouse effect is what allows us to live on this earth. It's what allows us to have
stable
temperatures plus or within the degree of variability. And the most prevalent greenhouse gas in the atmosphere is water vapor.
H2O.
H2O.
Okay.
So anyway, my point is that there's a lot more variables than just carbon emissions that we have to look at.
Sure.
But we've based our whole policy, we've based almost our whole way of dealing with particular issues around weather and stuff like that around carbon emissions, which I have an issue with.
Sure.
So that's my stance. That's what I know about global warming.
Okay. Now, Diana's just gotten named for her company to be the climate change czar. What is your position?
I think it's
position?
Called like special advisor on, I think
special
czar,
advisor on climate
change. The czar is Caesar, which means that you are a Caesar.
Oh, boy. Well, I just got word that because one of my teammates is going out on maternity leave, I am going to inherit her responsibility for developing content to address the SEC's, I don't know if anyone is into accounting, but there's disclosure requirements for SEC issuers, and the SEC is developing sort of a new disclosure rule. So companies will have to, you know, just to
talk about how much they've polluted.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be basically like they have to disclose how they're identifying, assessing, and managing climate-related risks, and you know, the impact of climate-related events, so natural weather, natural conditions, severe weather events, and then transition activities. So what costs are companies expending to kind of ready themselves for the transition to, you know, cleaner energy sources?
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm probably the wrong person to be on that project, but I will be dissecting the rule when it's finalized. And, you know.
Well, so what's your take then? I mean, we've heard Paul, you know, vociferate
climate change. I mean, yeah. Honestly, to be honest, when you sent me the topic for this podcast, I mean, it's not something I think about. It's not something, if I'm being honest, really care about. I just, you know, I don't wake up and the first thing I think about is like, oh boy, like what is one way I can reduce my carbon emissions for today?
What's incredible is that there are people that do that.
But there are. And
there are. And you know what? I honestly, all the power to them.
Well, but it causes a lot of problems because I know couples who have said, well, I'm not having any kids because of climate change.
Well, yeah, I think it depends on your perspective too, right? When we order sort of the importance of just what we're focusing on, right? So if it's all about the environment to the detriment of not having kids and also not focusing on your spiritual life, it's, you know, there is an ordering of things in...
There's a certain nihilism, however you want to say it, about the global warming thing, which it's all rested on that human activity is the cause of it and it's bad. So just take that for what it's worth for a moment. And so there are people, it's waned a little bit, thankfully, but about 10 years ago, I remember the debate was that there's too many, it's an overpopulation debate from the 70s and the 60s, which just didn't come true. We have plenty of food to feed everybody. There's still issues, fine, but we've figured that out for the most part. Regardless, there's always this thing. And my thing is, it's like, well, the thought that people wouldn't have children because of climate change, it's like, okay, well, that means that you think that there's too many people on this earth. It's like, who's the excess? Tell me, who are the excess people? Who are these excess people? Are you one of them?
Well, I don't think they would say any living person's excess. We just can't keep populating.
I guess. You know? But that would mean that we have too many people now, or will have too many people because the population grows exponentially.
That's the idea.
Yeah, so yeah. That's a problem. And then all the estimates right now, because as you develop, you have less kids, so we're probably going to peak out around 9 billion people, maybe 10 billion. And then we're actually going to, the global population may not actually grow much more than that.
Right, and most developed nations, including the United States, have a negative population growth.
Other than immigration.
Yeah. Other than immigration, yeah. Yeah.
Without immigration, our population would decline because our replacement rate's lower than 2.
Right. So that's a real challenge. And we're finding that in the short term, that's going to cause a lot of economic problems.
Right.
You know, I was just reading today that when Social Security came out as part of the New Deal, right? Mm. So in 1940, I guess it was when it kind of started, there were 48 people that were supporting every one person on Social Security, 48 workers.
Yeah.
Now it's 2.8. People are supporting every person on Social Security. So as the population continues to age and more things are, you know, government subsidies are going to be needed for Medicare and Medicaid and all that stuff, then we're going to just not have as many workers who are able to provide that.
Right, which is a problem. I also think that, so, I mean, maybe to talk about the Catholic perspective here, I think it is true. We do take care of our earth. I mean, this is a gift to us. We have dominion over it, but that doesn't mean when you love something, it doesn't mean that you destroy it, right? So fine.
And it's important to remember, humans are part of nature. We can't be alienated from it. This view that I see so often is like human beings are a blight on nature. We're a cancer, you know, on Mother Earth. No, the reality is we're part of nature and we need to use it rightly.
Yes. I do think it's fair in an argument to say that, you know, humans are, in the creation story, humans are given, we are different from the rest of nature.
Yes.
We have a soul. We have this ability. We take part in the logos. So we have this ability to create. We don't always adapt. We create. That's why we can live in pretty much every climate. Like, we have this ability to build and to construct our universe as we see fit, to an extent. And so I think we do have a outsized responsibility than if we didn't have that ability.
Yeah.
And I think because we try to be godlike, we do abuse that potentially.
Yeah. I'm going to paint with a hugely broad brush here.
But generalizations are the best argument.
They're the most accurate.
You know? Always. Yeah.
But you know, if you go back to scripture, God, in especially in the Old Testament, cities were always actually a place of evil. It was only when people were living in harmony with nature, with their surroundings, that there was peace and tranquility and order. So, and I think I certainly still see that, you know, going to New York City versus going to the backwoods of Kentucky, mm-hmm. there's a very different type of person in both places. And I would say it's a little more wholesome to go live out in the backyards of Kentucky, in part because there's a lesson that's learned through our exposure to nature. And that lesson is that there's a way things work that we can't just always automatically control with a flick of a button. And that means that we have to work within the framework that God has given us, which means that you have to acknowledge a creator. Mm. You know, when you live in the city and you can literally, you can change your atmosphere, you can change everything, you just design a new computer program to get rid of any imperfection in your life, you lose that sense and you start to believe that you are God.
Right.
Because you don't have to humble yourself before any other rules of nature.
Because we're made in the image of likeness of God, and that's part of the fall.
Right.
Is that we think we can be.
It's a technocratic mindset, right? That technology will solve all our problems.
Right, which is a problem. Well, this is a tangent, but I'll relate it just one last moment on that, is that that's why AI is so scary, because it's almost like we're creating a consciousness. And we discussed that in our AI episode. Please see that. It was in the past.
Just this morning, I was reading a very interesting article that the experts are starting to get concerned because more and more young men are having AI girlfriends.
Yeah, it's a problem.
It's a huge problem, right?
Any case, I would say a few other things that I would say talking about. So back to my thing about caring for the environment. I also think there's a big social cost to this. And one of my biggest pet peeves, and I get actually quite irritated by it, is that we do care about people. We do care about the plight of the poor. Now, one of the things, it's positive and negative. Always things are positive and negative generally because we're human. That's the way things are. But the fossil fuels are a miracle. They're a gift from God. The ability, and there's negatives to it for sure, but the increase in the standard of living, the increase in life expectancy, the advances we've made in the past 100 years because of oil,
it's all because
gas,
of fossil fuel.
It's all because of fossil fuels. And when you think about it, if the world is warming and you're in the middle of India, which is extremely hot, 100 plus degrees every single day in the summer, and you can say to them, we're going to put in a coal-fired power plant so that you can have air conditioning because, okay, fine, it's getting warmer. I'll give you that. But what's going to actually help these people is to actually give them electricity so they can better cope with it because that's their home.
The shipment of food across the globe is what allows a lot of people to eat and eat for a reasonable amount of money.
Yeah, U.S., I think I saw a statistic. I don't know if it's true. Somebody can fact check me. But I believe the U.S. produces enough calories for 70% of the world, and most of it gets thrown away.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's a logistics issue, but the way that's solved is through oil and gas. And the fact I drive a 5,300 pound SUV.
So you're the problem.
Yes, but
get rid of Paul and all of a sudden.
A 7 pound gallon of gasoline can power 7 pound gallon of gasoline can power my 5,300 pound SUV for 20 miles or more.
I get 36 miles.
25 on the highway, right? That's a miracle.
That's pretty amazing.
It's a miracle.
And
we can't and so that's where I get very irritated. And then what's the replacement? Well, it's solar panels, wind, whatever. We don't talk about nuclear because whatever. And then, of course, hydro is a problem because you dam up rivers and then that causes, just messes with
fish,
the ecosystem.
Fish die.
Yeah, whatever. So it's like fine,
but even
and then you need batteries.
Even
the batteries, you have to go and hire child labor in the Congo to go mine the cobalt. It's like, well, that's bad,
right? Or strip mine a mountain to, you know, get to lithium and
yeah,
and you can't recycle some of these electric batteries.
Yeah, we bury them in the ground
right.
For a while. We were sending them to Canada,
and ultimately, where does electricity come from?
The sun. That's true.
Some of it, yeah.
But
do we not use significant amount of coal-powered power plants?
Coal comes from the sun. Well, from photosynthesis.
Yes, it is. I mean, ultimately, yeah, so it ultimately all things come from the sun. Yeah, but
geothermal is a little different. That's why I hesitated. But yes,
that's
most of our energy comes from the sun.
That's like saying who hit the home run, God or, you know, Babe Ruth. Well, both, but
yes. Well, yeah. So I'm saying that the sun. So that's why it is great that we can harness the sun to some extent. Yeah. It's not perfect. We're not there yet.
No, we're not there yet. We're not there yet.
And so there's a huge social cost to this.
Yeah.
That I think as a Catholics we have to recognize and we have to balance the priorities of the poor, especially
right
we
because
sit in a developed country, and we have to have the plight of the poor.
That's one of the great themes of the Catholic social teaching is the preferential option for the poor.
Right.
The poor need to be number one in all the choices that we make. Which is often not the case for politicians who just want to score quick points, you know.
Right.
But Diane's been remarkably silent. I think she's Googling some wise quotes or something from...
Diane usually has the most accurate things we say on this podcast.
Yeah, we're shooting from the hip, but Diane probably has wise...
Well, things. I just want to bring up one, actually, Bishop Frank. I was just at a young adults...
That's at Sir Bishop, right? You're talking about
yes,
in the Bishop diocese.
Frank J. Caggiano.
Yes.
Please listen to his show, Let Me Be French, on Veritas Catholic Network.
French?
Let Me Be French?
Did you say French?
Frank.
You said French.
Let Me Be
I mean, it comes from that.
Well, it does come from that, right? Francis.
Francesco, yeah.
Was known as a Frenchman.
His name was Anthony, and they nicknamed him Frenchie.
His real name was Anthony?
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was baptized Francis.
I don't know about that, but his real name was Anthony.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and he was and I think it was Anthony. And then because he wore like fine French clothing and would go to France all the time, they nicknamed him Frenchie, Francesco.
Huh. Learn something new every day.
Yeah.
St. Francis being the patron saint of the environment. Good tie-in. But go ahead, Diane. Sorry. We interrupted you.
Sorry.
Guys.
What else is new?
ADD. Man.
It's a gift. Welcome to
Really. All right. So I was at this meeting with Bishop Frank. It was a young adult society talk. And this is very interesting because I quite honestly, I'm not that interested in the environment. And maybe I should be more, I don't know. But anyway, so he challenged us to kind of, you know, he made this really good point of we could be doing all the right things for all of the wrong reasons, right? So he's talking about sort of a Christian perspective on ecology and the environment and stuff. So I think the thing a lot of people today are so focused on, and obviously I see it the most from in terms of the way that I pay attention to it, is through sort of the financial, like the regulators and these standards that are coming out for accounting, because the focus, like Paul knows, as sort of, you know, in the finance world, there's a huge focus on ESG right now, which is environmental, social, governance. And all of these companies are being evaluated sort of on how they are reducing their carbon emissions. And there's, you know, the disclosures is kind of creating the transparency. So as to put pressure on the companies to kind of to act and to to keep up with their peers, so to speak. But Bishop Frank, he brought up a really good point about like what – he asks, like, what does our consumption tell us about ourselves and our priorities, right? So ultimately, if there is climate change and it's because of this consuming of goods and all of this energy that we're using, right, the deeper question that we have to ask that really isn't being asked or, you know, at least portrayed in the news or any of these, you know, like climate change sort of forums, articles and things is, what does the consumption tell us about ourselves and our priorities? Because he was making the point that, you know, like we have this God-sized hole in our heart and people are, the consumption is sort of just a symptom of what's going on, right? This lack of religion, a lack of focus on the things that matter the most for eternity, because people are trying to fill that hole, that emptiness with all of these goods, right?
Sure.
I'm going to get this car and it's going to make me feel so much better. I'm going to be admired by my peers and everything. And, you know, he was just saying that people are always going to demand more and more of us. Like, we can't buy people's love. And there's going to be that constant, you know, it's you're never going to suppress that need to get more, to consume more, because ultimately those things don't satisfy. So, you know, his big takeaway was like, look in the mirror. We that we can't just focus on the material stuff about like cleaning up the environment or whatever, reducing all the energy emissions. But we have to be stewards and obviously care for what God, you know, has given us. But we have to pay a lot more attention to the state of our souls and how, like, the things that are going to matter for eternity, because a lot of what is happening now is a result of things that are happening within us. But no one is looking in the mirror in terms of, like, what, you know, when you hear what's causing climate change, it automatically goes to these carbon emissions, right? These gases. But at the end of the day, who is causing that? If that is true,
it's our habits.
You know, it's our habits, and it's you know, materialism, consumption, a lack of focus on living a simple life.
You think about the conveniences that we take for granted now, like getting Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. You know, I can order anything and it comes the very next day. Well, that means that, you know, the driver's got to, you know, the amount of packaging that comes with that, you know, boxes and boxes, and then you have to. What's the poppy things called? I forget.
Bubble
wrap. That's it. I was for some reason blanked on that name.
The
poppy things. Yeah, the bubble wrap. You got all, you know, plastic everywhere, and you got to get the drivers out who is driving, like, you know, 12 hours a day to try to make all these stops because everybody wants it the very next day. And it's, yeah, you're right. It's a whole mental shift from consumption to reusing, to be making do with simpler things, simpler goods, simpler life. You know, and that's hard, and particularly because, if you look at terms of greenhouse gas emissions, you know, and things like that, who are the biggest producers of that?
China
and India, right? So, but who takes a lot of China's goods? It's us. Mm. So if we kind of stopped doing that as much, you know, get the stop the silly trinkets from China, maybe things would be better.
So I think at the end of the day, you know, like this whole climate change discussion, the major thing that's missing in sort of like the secular world environment is, you know, the underlying question of who is causing this consumption and why are we consuming, and is that a good thing? You know, and ultimately, from a Christian perspective, it's not.
Well,
that was somewhat Pope Francis's point in Laudate Si, which was one of his first encyclicals back in 2015, that I had to read actually as part of my job. I was investing in the oil and gas industry at the time, and my boss asked me to read this document and give a brief on it to our investment committee.
Hmm.
Because he knew I was Catholic.
Which he just came out with a sequel, too.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know forget that. What it was called, but yeah.
Okay, I'm not up on my encyclicals.
That's right. So let me ask you a very controversial question. So especially in the scriptures, like the Old Testament, God uses the climate and weather events to get across his purposes. You know, oftentimes to chastise his people, you know, with floods and locust swarms and things like that. Could some of this be caused by God because of the sinfulness of humanity right now?
Well, I would say he would allow it to happen. Maybe I would phrase it that way.
Do you think God does ever chastise people purposely? Like, that's his intention?
I mean, I think he could be permitting it to happen because of these, like what we just talked about, people's bad habits. And ultimately, I mean, his desire is for the salvation of souls, right? So sometimes you just have to sit in the bed that you make, and this is the bed that's being made right now. So
yeah,
maybe.
So I don't know. My take is that, you know, as you mentioned, that we were created to be stewards of the earth, right? That was our role in Genesis, to have dominion over the land. Which means that if there's disorder within us as human beings, there's going to be disorder in creation. Mm. And the more disorder in human beings, the more disorder there is in creation. So to me, to see this disorder in creation is the natural consequence. Maybe chastisement's too sharp a word. You know, maybe it's just the natural consequence of the disorder within mankind. And if we actually turn back to God and started putting God's order back, right, and stop pretending we can mess around with gender and biology and stuff like that, then all of a sudden creation would find itself ruled by rulers who have the right priorities.
Yeah, I think so. I think Diane's point on focusing on consumption and simplicity and all that, I think it goes to it. I consider myself a pragmatist, though. Pragmatic. I consider myself pragmatic, which means I'm a pragmatist. I think that's the way I would say it. Is it? There's a certain point where it's like, okay, well, like I don't know. I don't. There's a point where we do have to like live in the world and the constructs that we have, and so, I don't know. I'm always conflicted by that because we do have, there's a lot of advantages that can come with our conveniences that we take advantage of.
Mm.
Like if I wanted to right now, I could get in my car and drive to an adoration chapel and pray. Like, but I may not be able to do that if I had to walk, you know, that's 3 miles away. It wouldn't necessarily be if I had to walk an hour back, I probably wouldn't be able to do that.
Sure.
So there are some things. So I don't want to over like.
But imagine
we have to look at that. There are good things that come out of this. So I try to be pragmatic in the fact that I would say, maybe I'm wrong, correct me. It's okay if we live in the world and we use these things. We just shouldn't take them for granted.
That's
be thankful.
True.
We should be thankful for them and use and try to do our best to use them properly.
Well, that's the thing is I think we always constantly have to be evaluating our culture and our cultural habits. Like I was reflecting the other day, you know, I'm now in Monroe, Connecticut, which is about 45 minutes from Stanford, but probably most of my friends are, I'd say, yeah, most of my friends are in Stanford or Richfield or places that are a good 45 minutes drive away. And there's been times that I've, you know, wanted to see my friends in Richfield, so I'd make that drive. And I thought to myself, you know, if I lived back in the horse and buggy days, I would just get to know the people that are in Monroe because they're close, right?
Right.
We live in this world where, oh, well, you know, I just want to hop on a plane and go to Spain for, you know, a weekend. Not us, right? But
I mean, I have.
You have.
Well, I went for a wedding. It's fine. It's
but right. Yeah, but I mean, even think about your, was it John Mitty's wedding?
No, you married
oh,
him.
That's right. I did that wedding. Sorry. That wasn't Spain.
No, it was
my
bad. Friend. Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, like, it would be a complete culture shift to say, hey, let's focus on local, et cetera. I mean, I read a statistic that said that the average piece of fruit that you eat travels 1,200 miles to get to.
If not more.
And that's mind-boggling, right? I mean, like, if we
most
just...
Most of our fruit around here comes from Mexico.
Mexico. I mean, we have so many apples in the Northeast, and all of our apples come from Seattle, Washington.
Yeah, they
most of them. And then, you know, Pacific Northwest. And I'm like, dude, just...
And actually, Chile.
Pick these apples that are literally falling and rotting under your beautiful heritage apple trees here.
Do you know how they preserve them? Here's another modern thing. We put them in nitrogen, like very cold, cold nitrogen, and it stops oxidation. And so you can take an apple and then eat it a year later, and it's perfectly good. That's why you can have apples all year round. It's a miracle.
That is cool. And I've certainly appreciated having apples in, you know, January, February.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Also from Chile.
That's true. It's summer down there.
Yeah,
well, if you want applesauce, my dad's got applesauce from like 2008 in our freezer.
I will totally eat that.
Vintage 2008 applesauce.
I think my mom would like him to stop accumulating and making.
2008 was a fine applesauce.
That was a great vintage. My parents make fun of me because I go through their storehouse. They shop. My parents shop at Costco. It's only two of them.
I shop at Costco.
Well, yeah, but why do you need 5 pounds of mayonnaise when there's two of you?
I don't buy mayonnaise at Costco.
I know my parents buy everything in bulk. And so I go through there and I'm like, this is expired. They're like, you want to eat it? Oh, yes. Yeah. Eat all their expired.
Paper towels don't expire, as it turns out.
But they're good.
And their almond butter is delicious. It's the best almond butter I've ever had. And it's also very cost effective in terms of comparing to the
local That's true. Market. That's true. Yeah, that's true.
In any case.
Anyway, yeah.
So we're talking about climate change.
So finally, the last question, I was just curious, just out of curiosity, you know, have you ever been in like an extreme weather event? Hurricane?
Yes.
Earthquake?
Yeah.
You have too. Hurricane Sandy, remember?
Sandy. I was actually, I was in Brooklyn for Hurricane Sandy. I got to work from home for a week.
Great. How was that?
It was actually interesting because across the street from me, they had no power and no water, but on our side of the street, we had power and water.
So you made new friends that week and they all came over?
I mean, I didn't, but people did come across the street to shower and stuff. Yeah, it was great. It was actually it was pretty remarkable.
To keep the power.
I remember like going through the storm, it was kind of scary.
Yeah.
But I don't know, it was nice. It was actually really nice the next day. And then I flew to Texas.
That's how all the Paul's stories end. Then I flew somewhere.
Some people's livelihood were destroyed, but.
Yeah.
But I flew to Texas.
Yeah.
What have you
been remember, in? I remember at the time, because I was, you know, in client service doing audits and stuff, and it was, work from home did not exist then, and it was like
this is 2012, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
This is my October. I think this is the first year that I started work, and I remember working from my dad's office because our office was closed and you couldn't go to clients and all that stuff. I remember my brother being in college and like him sending videos of him, you know, floating around in the water with boats and stuff, and it just looked very dangerous.
Did you go to school in Connecticut?
He went to Fairfield University, so.
And that's
they were
close enough to the water. It's pretty low land.
Yeah, pretty dangerous with electrical lines and stuff too. But anyway,
that's right.
I also remember it. I think that was my mom's breaking point of when we decided, or they decided that they were going to get a generator because
And you haven't lost power since, right?
No, the generator broke, so they ended up paying another.
Oh no,
paying for a new one.
My parents now have a generator too, and the power hasn't gone out.
Yeah, so I moved to Connecticut in 2011.
Yeah.
In 2011, we had Hurricane Irene, lost power for a week.
Oh, I remember that. That was the beginning of the school year.
The weird October Halloween snowstorm.
Lost, that was 2011 too.
2011, lost power for another week. And then the next summer was Hurricane Sandy. So within 12 months, we had lost power for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I was in Bethel, my first assignment.
You definitely lost power.
We totally lost power. And the hurricanes were actually kind of nice because me and the other priests would actually just sit outside out back and just kind of shoot the breeze, have a little bonfire, you know, which was really actually kind of nice. But I thought, what did I move into? This like backwoods country where nobody keeps power on for more.
Stanford for like 7 years or something and then probably didn't lose power very
much. No, and thankfully where I am in Monroe, we're right next to the fire department.
And depending on where you live, it takes a while to get restored. So that's why my parents my mom was like, I've had it after what you just described. But in all seriousness, I mean, I went down to the beach and the rocks there that were like boulders. I mean, everything was just moved, destroyed. People's houses were completely just dilapidated. And I know that one of my managers from Long Island, they all had the mandate where they had to rebuild their houses. You know,
lift them up.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a big deal.
I guess maybe one last thing. So we talk about these extreme weather events, which are they're happening in more degree of frequency. I'm not sure, but I would say that it's important to know that we do have, like, God has given us so many gifts too that we do have the ability as humans to adapt to a lot of these things. And so a lot of our effort has been on trying to change the temperature of the atmosphere, which again, I think is just hilarious, as opposed to spending probably more money, again, for preferential treatment for the poor who tend to be living in the most vulnerable areas because they're vulnerable and they're cheap.
Nobody wants them.
Right. It's like, well, maybe that's what we should be focusing on.
Yeah, that's fair too. Fair too. How can we adapt?
Yeah,
you know, but I think it's a both and. Yeah,
yeah. Because if you have means, you're not affected by this.
Not as much.
Like I don't think about it ever. I have means, decent means, and I don't wake up like Diana was saying. I don't wake up every day.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think we're going to be okay.
I hope. At the end of the day, it's all in God's hands.
Right.
You know, our Earth, our solar system, the entire universe is in His hands. So
yeah,
He's not going to allow something that would end the human race unless He wants us to be ended.
Which is possible, I guess.
It is possible. Who knows?
But then that's probably I wouldn't call it an issue, but it's definitely a bigger event than any given hurricane or tornado or forest fire.
Yeah, the end of the world would be pretty big, I hear.
That'd be big.
From fire. That's what it says.
Net zero emissions by what?
2050. Yeah, net zero.
We're experts.
We have to stop the world from rising 2 degrees Celsius. But now they're thinking about reducing it down to 1.5 degrees.
Okay, that works for me.
Me too.
Which, by the way, is like 3.8 degrees Fahrenheit.
Plant more trees.
And then we'll come pick them for apples in the fall.
Yes, we're going to have apple trees, so we don't have to go 1,200 miles to get my Seattle-born apples.
Excellent.
All right.
Anyway, do you want to like close the show?
No.
Seem super excited.
No, I think you should. Okay. I did it once. It was mediocre.
It was great. No, I loved when Paul hosted that one episode.
Yeah.
He never did again.
It was quite funny.
Anyway, you can find us on Veritas Catholic Network, which is Paul's favorite radio station, at 1350 AM, 103.9 FM. Tune in next time to hear more of Paul and Diane.